China leaves a symbolic gap at the IMF and a huge Toyota recall. But where there's smoke, there may not be fire. I'm Jeff Horwich from APM. This is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. It is Wednesday, the 10th of October. China's central bank head is sitting out this week's IMF meeting. Plus, we'll have insights into a giant auto recall at Toyota, what's riding on the new James Bond song, and the Red Cross does its part to help rescue the Spanish economy.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
This morning, global markets are digesting the fact that the head of China's central bank will be a no-show at this week's meeting of the International Monetary Fund. The problem seems to be that the meeting is in Japan, and China and Japan right now are facing off over disputed island territories. For more on the significance of this development, I've got Ishwar Prasad. He's an economist at Cornell, also former head of the China division at the IMF. Good to talk with you.
My pleasure.
So this decision by the head of China's central bank, it has a very heavy symbolic impact. Is there also some important effect potentially on the proceedings themselves, the outcome of this IMF meeting?
First of all, this set of meetings is very important to Japan because it does mean that the world finance and economic leaders are converging on Japan, and not to have two of the senior most Chinese finance officials present is certainly a slap in Japan's face. It is going to have some effect on the meetings. When you have the second largest economy in the world and the economy that's making the biggest contribution to global growth not at the table, it's certainly going to have an impact.
What is it that IMF meetings like this are designed to accomplish?
So at these meetings, there are many opportunities for world finance leaders to talk to each other about the policies that they're employing and perhaps try to coordinate a few things and perhaps try to convince each other to do the right thing. So not having China at the table is certainly going to make a difference.
Are you surprised that the China-Japan spat would lead to something like this? Or are they making a bit much of this?
I'm not at all surprised. I had anticipated some very strong reactions, and I think this is a very clear way for China at a moment when Japan should be shining bright to strike at Japan.
So for the head of the U.S. Federal Reserve or for Japan's central bank, if they were to be able to speak face-to-face with these officials from China, what's the message that they would have wanted to convey?
Now, there are many other forums where these central bank governors meet, so it's not like this is going to mean a huge lost opportunity. But the world economic recovery is at a very delicate stage, and at this point, on this world stage, to show that there is a political spat between two very large economies in the world, which are very big and important for global trade, for them to have a spat that could spill over into something more ugly isn't going to do anything for confidence in markets around the world. And that could have an impact on the global economic recovery.
Ishwar Prasad is the former head of the China division at the IMF, currently an economist at Cornell. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Okay, let's do the numbers. Well, the morning so far has brought a down day on Wall Street. The Dow, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, all down. The Dow is most in the dumps, off about 0.5% a few hours into the trading day. Costco says profits jumped 27% last quarter. Whatever other problems there are in the global economy, American demand for 84 packs of toilet paper apparently remains strong. Walmart says sales on layaway are looking strong in advance of the holidays. Yum Brands says KFC is doing just fine in China. Thank you very much. The company raised its financial outlook for the year from good to finger-licking good. Not true. I made that up, of course. And later today, the Federal Reserve rolls out the much-anticipated 50 Shades of Beige. It is the regularly published beige book of informative economic anecdotes from around the country. These things are all relative, of course, but compared to the usual dry data, it's actually a pretty good read. Well, Toyota this morning is recalling 7.4 million cars around the world. It's the biggest auto recall anywhere in about 16 years. The problem is a power window switch that isn't properly greased up at the factory, which could, in a worst-case scenario, start to smoke. Carl Brower is editor-in-chief at Total Car Score. Good to talk with you, Carl.
Great talking to you.
Now, this is not about something necessarily deadly, this recall. Nobody's been hurt. Nobody's crashed. But from what I can tell, Toyota is pulling out all the stops. I mean, this is a giant recall. What's going on?
It's a real change in perception in that they want to be proactive and not reactive about these recall issues. They were more reactive a couple years ago with the unintended acceleration, and they saw what kind of media storm that brought them. And they've now decided that regardless of the genesis of these recalls, they want to be on top of them, and they want to be ahead of them, not behind them.
Do you think they're playing it about right in these first hours?
Some would argue maybe the pendulum's swung too far when they're taking such a massive recall on something that it would be very difficult for this to actually cause a real safety issue. But the idea that these window switches are such a huge issue for them to deal with, again, they just want to be in front of this.
Pivoting a little bit here, we've also mentioned the other problems for Toyota in China. Japanese cars are way out of favor there right now with the political spat and the anti-Japan sentiment. How big an effect do you think that will have on the company?
It could be a relatively short-term issue. I just don't think a year or two from now this will still be in the headlines. But there is the possibility with so many other brands rushing into that market like Volkswagen and General Motors that if there was this lasting impact and people in China decided to go to these other brands, they'd be there and available to them.
Carl Brower is editor-in-chief at Total Car Score. Thanks.
Thanks. Great talking to you.
This morning, the Supreme Court is taking up a case of affirmative action in college admissions. And it could change the landscape for all applicants. The justices could undo previous court decisions, rolling back the special consideration of race. This case involves a white woman who didn't get into a university. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports now on what it could mean for affirmative action in the workplace.
Affirmative action is legal in employment, that is, using race, ethnicity, or gender as one consideration in hiring decisions. In fact, it's required for federal agencies and companies that contract with the federal government. Margaret Sims is a senior fellow at the Urban Institute.
Most large companies do engage in some kind of affirmative action, and they think of it as a business proposition, not as a social proposition, to have members of that population in their workforce, either because it generates ideas or because it makes them sensitive to their customer base.
Elise Boddy at the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund says there's a potential danger here for employers.
If the Supreme Court were to conclude that diversity in higher education is not a compelling interest, it would reduce the pool of African American and Latino students who would be available for hiring by businesses and the like.
But Boddy says as of now, she's not aware of any major legal challenges to consideration of race in hiring decisions by private or public employers. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The Red Cross is getting involved in the European debt crisis. The organization is asking for donations to help the poor in Spain. My Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson talked earlier today with the BBC's Guy Hedgeco, who is in Madrid. Here's Jeremy.
Well, so give us the details, first of all. What exactly is the Red Cross going to do?
Well, the Red Cross has launched this campaign to raise 30 million euros because it wants to reach out to an extra 300,000 people in Spain to give extra coverage, whether it's giving them shelter or food or medical help, to people it feels are particularly vulnerable socially. And in great part due to the economic crisis that Spain is suffering. So they want to broaden their coverage. They already help out around 2 million people in Spain, but they want to broaden that to another 300,000 people.
Now, when we hear a story like this here in the U.S., that the Red Cross is getting involved in Spain, it does paint an extremely dire picture of the debt crisis, of the effect it's having on the ground right now. You cover this all the time, Guy. Is this an accurate depiction of how bad things are?
Well, I think you can see two sides to it, certainly, because, I mean, many people in Spain, I think, really don't like to accept the idea that Spain is in such serious trouble, that it's, a country like, for example, Greece or these other countries that have been bailed out by the European Union, so that they wouldn't accept being put in that kind of category. And certainly the politicians, the country's leaders insist that Spain, is essentially a strong economic country. But I mean, if you look at the reality, you do see, for example, a lot more people begging now on the streets than you did 2 or 3 years ago. Hmm. You see a lot more shops and stores and businesses boarded up, even around central Madrid, which has always been a real business hub. But beyond that, people just talk about the crisis a lot. You can feel that people are very worried about it. So while to a certain extent life goes on as normal, Spaniards are very good at enjoying themselves and enjoying life. But they are talking a lot about this crisis. It's very much on their mind and it's worrying them a lot, particularly the labor issue, losing their jobs.
the BBC's Guy Hedgeko in Madrid. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
As of today, the world's biggest exporter of oil is Saudi Arabia. No surprise there. It's followed by Russia. But according to a new report from the International Energy Agency, the current number 7 on that list is gaining fast. Iraq could become the world's second largest oil exporter within 8 years. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Troe's got more.
Remember the protest signs during the war in Iraq? No war for oil. The assumption, American oil companies would tap Iraq's vast oil reserves after the war. Well, most of Iraq's oil contracts have been awarded, and the winners are
China, African state-owned oil companies, other Middle Eastern state-owned oil companies, Russian state-owned oil companies.
Blake Clayton at the Council on Foreign Relations says non-U.S. companies have had more success in Iraq, in part because they offered to do more than just pump oil.
Maybe it's to help build roads, to help build schools.
He says that type of infrastructure is the key to unlocking Iraq's huge potential for oil, not just getting the crude out of the ground, but delivering it to market and creating a stable society to keep that going. Bhushan Bari at Cambridge Energy says Iraq's aiming for 8 million barrels a day by the next decade.
It'll fall short, but even falling well short, it's going to be quite an expansion.
The biggest expansion in the oil market, he says, since the fall of communism opened Russia's oil to the world. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
Maybe you've been seeing previews for the new James Bond movie. It's called Skyfall, and it won't be out for another month or so. But the theme song to the movie by Adele is out now. Fans and critics have gotten a preview on her website. The LA Times called the song a writing of the ship. Well, what does that mean? Well, with the early release, the song is trying to end something of a Bond song drought. Here's Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith.
Nearly 20 million people have already listened to Skyfall.
I really enjoyed it.
Aram Sinreich is a media professor at Rutgers University. He says writing a Bond song is tricky.
The song has to combine excitement, danger, sexuality, that is the hallmark of the Bond brand. There's the musical formula, which is the augmented fifth. Ding, da, da, ding, 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 ding.
In spite of those restrictions, many Bond songs have become big hits. Goldfinger by Shirley Bassey, For Your Eyes Only by Sheena Easton, Live and Let Die by Paul McCartney. But no Bond song has topped the charts since Duran Duran's View to a Kill in 1985. Sinreich says as the Bond franchise has grown, there's been more pressure on the Bond song.
That overemphasis on market research-driven content has probably undermined the creative elements of James Bond theme songs over the last two decades.
Adele might be able to break the Bond curse. Industry analyst Bob Lefsetz says Adele's a top-selling singer on the planet now. Fans want to hear more from her.
Bond is experiencing a renaissance with Daniel Craig, and they match it with the number one person by far in the world. That's a recipe for success.
In New York, I'm Smith. Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Enjoying my Marketplace morning martini here, shaken, not stirred, of course. And finally, in other entertainment news, with all the comic book superheroes seemingly tapped for major movies already, Hollywood is turning to some less conventional heroes. Variety reports that 20th Century Fox and the animation studio that made Ice Age have secured the rights for a reboot of Peanuts. Do we really need that? Well, if that's your reaction, you're not alone. Of course, the crusty classics like A Charlie Brown Christmas have such a lofty spot in our nostalgia that the initial public reaction is indeed largely along these lines.
Oh, good grief.
Well, Lord help us if they allow Charlie Brown to actually kick that football. I'm Jeff Horwich, and that's all for the Marketplace Midday Update for today. We come to you from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.